Magic.
And the world of illusion.
Magic TV.
And Craig Petty. Proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
Welcome back to Magic TV. My name's Craig. It's 9 o'clock. It means it's time for a Magic Live. And I am here with somebody who, he's one of my favorite magicians. He is super creative. He's an incredibly charismatic performer. He's been there, done that, bought the t-shirt over and over again. And I am, of course, talking about the legend himself, Blake Voigt. How you doing, Blake?
Ooh, thank you for that intro. I'm good. How are you, man?
I'm super excited. Same. When I started doing these interviews, I had a bucket list of people that I wanted on this channel, and you were right at the top of the bucket list. So,
oh, cool. I'm honored.
Man, to have you on here means a lot. It really does. Especially as I know how busy you are, and I know you got a million things going on. So the fact that you found time, really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Anytime, man. I'm obsessed with magic. The more I can talk about magic, the better.
Well, that's great. And I want to do a deep dive into your career. I want to talk all about you. I want to talk about how you got into magic, and we're going to talk about you as a creator as well, and everything else.
Cool.
I want to start off, for people that don't know who Blake Voigt is, let's start off at the very beginning. And let me ask you a question. How did you get into magic? What was that origin story for you, Blake?
You know, I've told it a few times, and yet recently I had a conversation with my mom, and I wanted to get her side of it. And I have changed my story as I've gained information about myself, because I have such a bad memory as a kid. I realized that as a kid, I was always into origami and building and Legos. And I loved singing and dancing. And I loved making people laugh. I loved telling stories. I loved solving puzzles. I basically loved being a magician before I knew what that was. Which I didn't realize until I talked to my mom last week. And so when I was 8 years old, I saw a magician for the first time at a restaurant. He was doing table to table close up magic. And that was the perfect time in my life to see that. Cause I was like, wait a minute. This guy kind of does everything I love. I want to learn how to do that. So that's
very cool. And from that, obviously, you started, I imagine you kind of started buying everything and
everything. Yeah. I bought every trick I could. For birthdays, for Christmas, that was the only thing I asked for from family members. School library, public library, couldn't really do YouTube back then for as much as you could now. So, we didn't really have a magic store in Indiana where I grew up, so I couldn't go to a shop. I joined the IBM local ring so I could go be around magicians, but I just took everything in as much as possible.
That's amazing. And did you go, because obviously you're one of the busiest pros that I know and you work all over the world, but did you go straight into full-time entertainment, or was there a period of time where you got a job? And
yeah, well, I'm not really. So I went to university in Indiana to be a dentist, to be an orthodontist, even though I did my first paying gig when I was a freshman in high school. I don't know how old you are then. So 14, I got hired to do my golf coach's daughter's birthday, and I got to perform, and I thought I was doing it for free. And at the end of the show, he tipped me $40. And I was like, I didn't know someone would pay me to do this. I didn't know I could make money doing this. And then, so for the first year, my rate was $40 because I knew I was worth that because someone had tipped me that. So that was my 1 hour rate, pretty solid. And then from there, performing all other people's material, as a sponge, line for line. You know, if it was a Gazzo line, I did it as a 14-year-old, which was stupid. You know, so And then I got a, in high school, I got a restaurant, and that was a game changer, getting a restaurant gig. So every Monday night for 3 hours for 2 years, I did restaurant magic, which that was for me the changer of, you know, doing better and becoming a better performer and experience and stuff. And then in at university, I was in, started to create my own lines, and then I started to create my own tricks or my own versions of other people's tricks. And then that's when I started going to conventions, and I showed magicians my versions of other people's stuff, and they were like, that's original. I'm like, this isn't original, this is just my take of the other guy's thing, and I took that guy's thing and I put it here. And they're like, no, that's called original. Like, once you take, like, you know, if nobody can catch your, if nobody can know where everything came from, that's a, you know. And I didn't realize I could do that. And then Copperfield happened while I was in college. And then, so I dropped out of college to go work for David Copperfield. And then when I did that, I stayed full time.
Well, I mean, that let's just quickly talk about that, because that's incredible. I mean, any magician that's watching this would love a call going, hey, college kid, would you like to come and work for the most successful magician in the world? You know, Oh, hang on, let me think about this. I'll call you back. I mean, that's, was it a difficult decision to go see a dentistry? I'm off.
It was, I wish it was as simple as the phone call. It was a series of crazy coincidences that led to that job opportunity. But all thanks to Chris Kenner, and who I met in Vegas filming my first ever magic video for Theory 11. Mm-hmm. So I was in Vegas filming it on the last night. We go there, and I had changed my major to a design major to be an industrial designer. And it's because I thought I would learn a lot of skills that magicians need to build, like prototyping and building models and woodworking, all that stuff. So it's a super long story. I'm trying to figure out how to tell this short version. But basically, on the last night in Vegas, we got to see Copperfield's show and have dinner with Homer Leawag and Chris Kenner. Thanks to Jonathan Baim at Theory 11, he set that up because he was friends of them. And I got a little buzzed because I had a couple drinks, and I was super confident. And I asked Chris Kenner and Homer Leawag for an internship. And they laughed at me and they were like, no, we would never, we can't hire an intern for a month and teach them all of these secrets. This just would never happen. And I was like, oh, all right, whatever. And then Kenner said at the end of the night, the next time you're in Vegas, don't get a hotel. Just let me know and you can come stay with me. And I was like, all right. Next day, you can look up the weather reports. This is like historical fact. The biggest snowstorm Indiana has ever had in the last like 50 to 100 years happened while I was in Vegas. College kid, didn't have any money. And my flight got canceled back to Indiana to go back to school and stuff. And so I could either call my parents and beg for money, ask Jonathan Baim to put me up, or call this dude who I'd met the night before and take him up on his offer. And so I called Kenner and he was like, I'll come pick you up right now. And I crashed at his house. And for the next 5 days in a row, every morning, all flights in and out of Indiana were canceled. So I stayed with Kenner for a week at his house. And every night we were up till 1 a.m., 2 a.m. jamming magic. And on the last day when he dropped me off at the airport, he said, if you drop out of college, we'll hire you full time. So that's how that happened.
Wow. So obviously then it's an obvious decision. You're going to move to Vegas. You're going to do that. But let me ask you a question. I want to talk in a bit about your style as a performer, because you're an incredible performer. And that's what I love about you. But you went to work for Copperfield, not as a performer, but on his creative team, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did you find it difficult not being able to perform as much? And instead you're working on the stuff behind the scenes? Because I know you spoke off camera that you get a buzz from walking on stage and doing that sort of things. And this is a job that would basically effectively stop that. And you get to watch somebody else perform the tricks that you're creating.
Yeah, it was cool. Yeah, it's a great question. After a year of it, I was ready to... I worked there for a year, and after a year, I was ready to go back to performing and getting on stage. And I'm sure if I would have worked there 10 years, I would have gained so much more knowledge, and I just soaked in as much as I could in the year I was there. But just watching how hard David worked, and Chris and Homer, those three guys are the hardest working people I've ever been around. And you realize it's not an accident that he's the most famous, successful magician alive, because you see his work ethic. And it was cool to see the best pro in the world, what he did with an idea on stage. And there was a lot of testing that went involved. And so when we came up with a trick, it would be performed in front of a test audience, you know, so that we could see people's reactions before it went into the show officially. And a handful of times, David let me perform the trick. So people would come to see Copperfield, you know, however many 100 people, and 100 of like 600-700 people, and then 100 people would get a special pass. They would stay after the show. David would walk out on stage and introduce me. I went out on stage and I performed the new trick as Copperfield. And that way he could sit out in the audience and watch the trick as an audience member. Wow. 'Cause then he would get a different perspective that way. And so I did get to fill that, you know, itch that scratch a little bit while I was there. I mean, then you're getting notes from, I don't know if I can cuss on your channel, fucking David Copperfield walking over telling you, maybe next time try this line. I was like, okay, maybe don't waddle back and forth as much on stage. Okay, I'll do that.
Oh, man. For somebody who a year before was in like college,
yeah,
you're then on stage in Vegas being given notes on performance by David Copperfield. You must have times just gone, how did this happen? This is incredible.
Yeah. It was, you know, and we were working. I wish I would have appreciated it more in the moment. I feel like I have a greater appreciation for it now, looking back on it. Because in the moment, it was just all so fast and furious. And we were working 12, 14-hour days, 7 days a week. So we were literally falling asleep and waking up and working on stuff. So it was over in the blink of an eye. But now that I look back on it, the lessons I learned and just the experience and the stories and the friends I made are lifelong friends now, thanks to that.
Well, obviously, off the back of that, you obviously then went back into performing, and you've become, let's make no bones about it, one of the most successful performers of magic. You know, you are always busy. You perform at a very high level. You're incredibly successful. Did working with David kind of put a light a fire up you and go, right, okay, I can do that. I want to do that. Was that?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, lit a fire under my ass. You know, getting to create magic for David Copperfield went a long way in the consulting world, in the behind the scenes, but that doesn't really mean anything to anybody else. It confuses the hell out of people when they find out that there are people who create magic tricks for those people, you know. So as much as I thought it would be like a great resume thing for my performing career, it didn't really do anything except motivate the hell out of me. But it was a great thing for my consulting career, because that on your resume was invaluable.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, talking about you as a performer.
Yeah.
I think of you as a stage performer. I mean, obviously you've done some amazing close-up. You are an amazing close-up magician, but a lot of the stuff that I think of that you bring out, especially from a creative point of view, and a lot of the performance footage we see of you is you on stage.
Mm-hmm.
It's very unusual for these days, because these days a lot of people that get into magic, it's kind of the focus is close up, not on stage. Was it always the desire to be on stage, or did that come about from working with David?
Oh man, these are good questions. I think I've always wanted to be on stage, even before David. That definitely grew by 1,000, you know, working there and seeing him every night go out on stage. And, you know, some people hear the idea of going on stage and doing the same show over and over, and they're like, I would never do that. Like, I loved that. I loved the idea, because it is different every night, even though the lines are different or the same. But, the audience being different every night really drove me nuts. And then like from an ego standpoint, just the idea of being able to talk to and entertain that many people all at once was really cool to me. It felt like, you know, I'm a very shy person in real life. I would rather talk to one or two people or 1 to 2,000 people. I don't like talking to like 8 to 10 people.
Right. Yeah.
Like I like the extremes. So that's always been, I think even when I was little, like I was in choir and musicals, and being on stage and being in front of a lot of people, I've always just really enjoyed that.
Well, one thing that I've always got from watching you perform is instantly an audience will warm to you. You're just so likable. You're just so, you ooze charisma. You really do. And I've said on this channel before that the best book that a magician can read is a book like How to Win Friends and Influence People, and learn to really kind of win people over. Is that something that you had to learn? Like, because I've seen you do it. You can walk out on stage and with that, well, I mean, heck, look at your routine where you come out gaffer taped up. I mean, you literally come out on stage unable to say a word. And like, you're just like, you can't speak. And yet at the end of this routine, the entire audience love you, like without even saying a word. Is that something that came naturally, or did you work hard to achieve that? Because that's an incredible skill.
Thanks, man. I think both. I think it came natural, and also I've worked really hard at it. I think the desire, like I try to work on being not a people pleaser, but that's definitely a thing that I have to work on in my personal life. But like, you know, that people pleaser instinct in me to make everyone happy and to make everybody like me is like a fight or flight, like gut reaction to being in front of a lot of people. So I will do anything to make them like me, or like make them have a fun time and have a good time. And I feel like because I will do anything, and because I genuinely just want people to be having fun, for some reason it comes across that way. And that's a hard thing for an audience to not like be okay with, at least. Cause I feel like there's challenging performers. Like if I'm at a comedy club on a lineup with comedians, sometimes there's comedians that are a little, you know, combative, and magicians can sometimes come across combative. And I've just never come across that way, which is, I'm happy about. And because of that, I feel like people are more on board with me from the get-go, cause they don't feel like I'm like against them. It's almost like, oh, we're rooting for this guy. He seems to really be trying hard. It's like, I hope this trick works for him. You know? And I think that's my strategy, I guess.
That's very cool. Yeah. Have you got any advice when it comes to actually performing on stage? Because you just mentioned there, you performed at the biggest events in front of thousands of people. You performed in front of comedy club audiences all the time, college events. I mean, really difficult audiences where you have to be good to win people over. And I think there's a lot of magicians that would like to perform on stage, but they get so nervous, the thought of walking out in front of a cold audience and doing what you do. Is there any advice on how to manage those nerves?
I mean, the more you do anything, the less nervous you get. So the 10th time you go on stage, you're going to be less nervous than the first, the 100th time. And I think just knowing that, I feel like you can trick yourself into being like, I'm still nervous. Like every show I do, I get nervous. I'm not one of those guys. I have friends who they can be sitting backstage eating dinner on their phone and their name gets called and they walk. I'm like, I can't eat before I go on because I'm thinking about my lines. If I'm trying something new, I'm looking at the audience out of the curtain. But the minute I get out on stage, I have fun. It's just the anxiety or the buildup to it. Advice I'd have on is just do it more and more. And then I feel like also when I perform, I try to never insult my audience's intelligence. And so being hyper aware of your scenario, being hyper aware of your surroundings, and just not pretending that it's anything other than what it is, I feel like tends to help win over any situation. Like if it's a college show, I've shown up at a college show one time where it was like 1,000-seat beautiful theater and there were 50 kids like that showed up to this free, you know, thing. I'd been paid by the university, so it didn't matter how many people came, but only 50 kids showed up and they're all spread out. And I came out on stage and I was like, well, there could have been a lot more of you and you're all really spread out, but I could do a lot cooler magic up close. Just everybody come in. And I jumped off the stage and turned, I have enough close-up material that I ended up kind of doing a parlor close-up set to these 50 kids and they had a blast. It was like one of my favorite shows ever. Whereas if I would have stuck to my lines and stuck to the material on stage with everyone spread out, I feel like it probably would have bombed. But, you know, I feel like that's advice I'd give is if you go somewhere and something, if everyone's thinking about something, you know, point out the elephant in the room or just be aware of where you are, I guess.
Really good advice. Really
good.
Go
off script if you can.
Absolutely. That's brilliant advice. It really is. Now, let me ask you a question. Getting back to your career. So you'd left David Copperfield. Mm-hmm. You start performing and you very quickly become successful. The shows are coming in. Everything's going fine. You obviously are then start. Yeah, I mean, you'd already released some stuff through Theory 11, but then you kind of really start releasing a lot of magic. You start really innovating and creating. And you know, I'm a huge fan of your products. Thank and you. I want to talk about them. But before I do, why? Why did you start creating magic to sell to magicians? Because you were very successful as a performer. I don't think you needed the money to pay the rent. Was there a reason why you wanted to start kind of bringing magic out for magicians? Or
I didn't create anything ever for it to be a product. Everything that I've ever created was, this sounds super selfish, but like was for me. Like I was filling a void for a trick or a routine that I wanted to do. And then I perfected it for that trick. And then I either, you know, did that trick for a few years and was like, I don't want to do this anymore. I think other people might want to. And then in a way, like the way that I learned all my magic was just buying tricks from other people and finding out that other people liked and had an interest in buying the trick I was doing. I really thought that was cool and just a bonus source of revenue. And also I could sell tricks that maybe I wasn't doing anymore. Or like, you know, instead of a trick I create, I perform it for a year. And instead of it just living in a drawer, I could give other people the chance to do it. And I really liked the idea that my trick was being performed for people and I wasn't doing it. The money was just kind of a cool bonus, obviously motivated by the money to do it. But I didn't create any of those things to sell them.
Which is probably why your products are so good, because you see a lot of, you do see a lot of creators, don't you, that just bring out so much stuff and you can tell it's being made just to sell as opposed to coming from somebody's own personal working act.
Now I have changed stuff from my act to make it more of a magic product because I've been obsessed with magic for so long. I do know what I like in a product. I do know what I like, you know, so I've taken tricks that I created for myself and then tried to figure out like, how would this be a product? Because I don't think everybody's gonna do what I do with this. I would love to make it more versatile. I should probably put some other ideas on there for other people and make it as appealing as possible to as many people as possible. So there's thoughts that go into it after the fact, but not from the creation standpoint.
Well, with the amount of products that you've created and released to the community over the years, you know, you've probably got 2 or 3 shows worth of material there. Do you still perform other people's material? I mean, you talked in the beginning of your career, you know, you were taking this person's line, this person's trick. Do you still perform other people's material? Or when Blake Voigt does a show, is it really more of a unique experience using stuff that you've put together specifically for you?
Both. I wish it was like, it's all my stuff, but it's like, you know, even my stuff, I feel like is other people's stuff. It's just my version. Like I said at the beginning, I've just changed somebody else's thing so much that now it's mine. or I call it mine, or people know me for it. But, you know, if they really looked at all the crediting and where I got it from, they'd see, you know, where everything came from. So my shows, I feel like, are the same thing. More than it's other people's tricks or my tricks from a method standpoint, I care more about the presentation, that it's mine. I don't think in my show I perform anybody else's patter or presentation of anything anymore. It's all my presentation, and it's probably half my methods and then half other people's really brilliant methods where I see it, I'm like, I would have never thought of that. Like, I really want to use that toy, that gadget, but I want to do something different that fits me, you know? Yeah.
And, you know, I'm a big fan of watching you perform. One of my favorite performances, and I have so much respect for you watching you do this, was when you went on James Corden and you did the Vanishing Stool routine. Mm-hmm. And I've seen so many people go on TV and they play it safe and they use some other person's material, or, you know, they're going to do this. You went on there and you did, I think there was your force bag, there was your six way out, there was your vanishing stool. It was all your own material put together into this incredible routine that literally brought the house down. It was amazing.
Thanks, man. Yeah, that was, well, again, that's a great example of a routine that none of those were meant to be products. Those were all things that actually the force bag was invented for that trick, which, you know, the force bag isn't mine. The idea of a multi-pocket plastic bag is old, and many people have versions of those. I just went online and I realized I had three stools, so I needed to do three forces, but I wanted to be able to show another pocket of indifferent things. So I searched for weeks and months for the four pocket. So finally I was like, fuck, I gotta figure out how to make a bag. So like I did research, bought bag sealers, bought welding tools, or like a spot welding to try to melt plastic. And then I finally had this four-way bag and I was like, perfect. And then did it for a year and a half, 2 years. And I was like, maybe other people would want a four-way bag. So that was, same with the six outs, and that whole routine was actually created for Corden. I got contacted by them because they saw AGT, they saw Fool Us, and they're like, we'd love to have you on the show. James knows a lot about magic, and the booker who contacted me knows a lot about magic. And he was like, we'd love to have you on the show, but we need it to be a trick that's never been done before. And I was like, well. Sent him a list of tricks and he was like, well, that's kind of this version of this guy's and this, and I was like, oh shit. So I got like wicked constructive but criticism on all my ideas of what I do. So I was like, fuck this. And so I wrote the stool routine, just wrote it as is, no method, and I sent it to them, and he was like, perfect, can you be on next week? And I was like, that trick doesn't exist. I kind of did it as a joke to you. I can figure it out, but I'm going to need probably 3 to 6 months to figure that trick out, because it's not a trick. It's just, you know, it's a concept. And he was like, oh, I love it even more. See you in 6 months. So then 6 months turned into a year. It took me a year to fully develop it. And then whenever it was at a place where I liked it, I sent him the video and he was like, that's exactly what you wrote. So come on the show.
Well, the vanishing stool is, I think, the most magical thing that I've ever seen. I remember the first time I saw it on the Corden show, I was like, I felt like a layman again. I was like, no. It was so brilliant. Like, do you still do that in your acts? I mean, you talked about how, because you do sell that on your site, don't you? You can. Yeah. It's a very high ticket item. It's not a cheap item. I can understand why, but is that kind of an exception of something that you've offered for sale, but you know the price is going to keep it very select?
Totally. Yeah, I still do that one. I do not do the three stool routine though. It's a gimmick. I mean, it's a gimmick that allows someone to sit on a stool and then when you lift the sheet, nothing is there. So with those parameters, the gimmick, the illusion prop is so great now. I use it for a few other different types of routines, but because once I was on TV doing it, I didn't, sometimes I liked it when people saw the ending coming because they're like, oh, we saw this one on TV. You know, I still, it was kind of a bummer. And so I changed the routine. So it's different now. It just uses one stool, or I have a couple different, I mean, it's just a fun utility device to use. But yeah, I still use that prop for sure.
Well, you know, we've talked about all these different products that you've released. Have you got any advice on creativity? Because I think for a lot of magicians, it's the holy grail, isn't it? To, I want to release my own magic product. I want to work with Theory 11. I want to work with Illusionist, whatever it may be, and have their own unique product that they can bring to market. As somebody who's brought so much unique products to market and is like, let's be honest, so creative that David Copperfield wanted to hire you, you know, have you got any advice on that creativity process about how to actually create a trick? What's the process you go through?
I mean, I wish there was a formula, but I think I didn't set out to be a magician who released tricks. I set out to be a magician who was performing completely original magic. And so in order to do that, I absorbed as much magic as possible, watched everything, YouTube, social media, TV, anything that was magic, I soaked it in. And then that way I knew what had been done before. And then it took me forever to figure out how to be myself on stage or in person while doing magic. And so then I took my favorite tricks and just tried to change them to fit me. And you know, so I wasn't doing Gazzo lines or Mark Mason jokes in my set. And then I'm a perfectionist when it comes to design. And so I would buy a trick, and whenever I learned, this is how I accidentally started creating magic in college. I started to get tricks that I bought from Penguin or Theory, or, and I would be like, oh, this would have been so much better if it would, hold on, let me just take this apart and make it like this, because this may, you know, there's a seam, you could hide the seam if you did it this way. And then, oh wait, but you know what, if it wasn't a playing card, if it was a dollar bill, I can figure out how to make it with a dollar bill. And then like 20 steps later, it's like I'm doing something with a dollar bill and somebody's like, that's an original trick, you should release that. And I'm like, oh, this was just because I tried fixing this card trick thing to make it better and fit me. So I feel like just never settling for a method or a trick as is, either your own ideas or someone else's, everything can always be better. So trying to take a trick to the next level, I feel like is a good starting place for people trying to create their own stuff.
It's really good advice.
Ooh, really good advice that Chris Kinner gave me once, which I think about weekly, was he said, if you ever get stuck, or if you ever have like a brain fart or a creative lapse, take a trick that you hate and fix it.
Wow.
And that is so fun. Like you, so what you do is you take a trick, or it could be a product, it could be a performance by a magician that you just personally like, I hated this performance. Figure out why, instead of just being there being like, I don't like it. Write down like, what, why don't you like it? Like, well, I don't like it because it has to be done at the waist. Well, can you figure out how to do it up here? Like, you know, okay, I also don't like it because it uses cards. Okay, can you figure out how to do it with bills? You know, like write down why you don't like this trick. And if you can make it a trick you like, you might invent something, like, which is kind of cool.
That's, yes, very, very true. Completely agree with that. And what is your, out of it, I'm going to put you on the spot now. Sorry about that. What's your favorite thing that you've ever created?
Man. I don't have a A favorite product? You mean like a product that's like on
or
a the
product
market?
Or something you've created for yourself, something that people would know. I don't want you to give something away in your show that, you know, but yeah, something that people would know that you've created out of everything that maybe you've offered to magicians is the one that.
I don't know. I don't think I have a favorite. I think everything is uniquely different, and I like it for different reasons. The trick that probably like I created had the hardest time deciding to release, and then I still do it, is the duct tape trick. Is like with the card that ends up in your mouth. I remember that's obviously heavily inspired by John Allen's silent treatment. That's where I started. I like, you know, the process I just said to you, I went through that with his trick and then came up with a different method and a different presentation and a different, you know, enough stuff. But I was so happy with the solution and I have so much fun performing that one that one's probably the most fun I have with an older trick of mine. That I just probably will, I came up with a new version of that. So what I did was right before pandemic hit, I was annoyed with myself how often I do that trick. And so I wrote down why I like it so much. Like, what are the factors that trick has that makes it so much fun for me? And then I wanted to create a trick that could tick all those so that I would stop doing it just to like make myself branch out, you know, and come up with something new. And I did, and I think I nailed it. And I got to do it 3 times on stage and then COVID fucking hit. And so it's like an open prediction type effect. It uses a lot of crazy methods, but it's the same energy and vibe. And so next few shows I have for the next year, I'll be doing that type of trick, which is like duct tape, open prediction, high energy performance, and then I'll probably release that after I do it too much.
Well, you just said something there. You said you were annoyed with yourself that you did duct tape so much. Do you always like to try and change your act up? And is that done more for you or for your audience? Like, is it because you're going back to see the same people or is it because you don't want to feel stale?
I wish I was famous enough to where it was for them. You know, but I don't think I'm there yet. It's definitely self-indulgent. And like, I get to be creative behind the scenes for so many people. And I get to come up with so many ideas and I see other people do them. And I'm like, so often, especially the performers who are like me, you know, like whenever I was working a lot for Justin Willman, I have a very similar style. I feel like we're very different on stage, but comparable, and some of the material I worked on a team of, and you know, he got to do, I'd be like, man, I wish I got to do that one. Like, you know, if I had spent as much energy and time as I did on that for him, for my stuff, I think I could come up with my own thing of that level. And then there's a feeling that is indescribable. I don't know if it's just like warms your heart or your brain or strokes your ego, but the idea of doing a completely original thing in front of a lot of people and then clapping is a really cool feeling. And so, you know, I love the idea. I love bombing. I love trying new stuff. I am not afraid to fail. And that's one of the reasons why the booker at the Comedy Magic Club out here in Los Angeles repeatedly books me. Because he knows I bring new shit and he has seen me bomb. And I, like the first couple of times it happened there, you know, I've apologized. He's like, nah, man. He goes, you heard nothing. So did I. He goes, I'm excited to see what you do tomorrow night. Because he knows like I'm not going to do the same thing. And I love taking a bomb and turning it into like a thing. Yeah.
That's great. Turn negatives into positives. That's,
yeah.
Do you, obviously, you've referenced this, obviously you no longer work with Copperfield anymore, but you do, a large part of your career is consulting with other people and creating magic for other people. Do you ever sit down to create something for somebody and you kind of think, this is just too good. I'm gonna put that in a pocket for myself And I'm going to, you know, when I'm done with this contract with this person, I'm going to work on that for myself. Has that ever happened?
I decided early on that I would never let that happen. And I'm happy to say I've never done that. I've been around it before and it's totally fine, to each their own ideas. I forget who I heard this advice from, but someone told me once, they said, if you think that's the best idea you'll ever have, then you're right.
Mm.
And so I get fired up by coming up with something for someone else and giving it to them, because A, that's what they paid me for. And B, it just lights a fire under my ass, because I'm like, fucking shit, here's your thing. And now I got to go come up with a thing that's 10 times cooler for myself, you know? So I have not done that. I enjoy seeing other people do, especially like at a certain level, when you see a performer like Justin Willman or David Copperfield or David Blaine do your thing that came from your brain, it's like super cool. And, you know, it just inspires you to come up with stuff for yourself, I guess.
Absolutely. That's great. Now, you alluded earlier on to AGT and Penn and Teller, which are two shows that you've done, obviously. That's the two shows that magicians that are watching this are thinking, I want to do AGT. I want to do Penn and Teller. Can we very quickly just talk about that? I mean, what were your reasons for going on those two programs? Because let's be honest, at that point, you were very successful anyway. It's not like you were trying to find your big break. I mean, you're working solidly, you know, you've got the respect of your peers, people are wanting to use your services to consult on their own shows. I mean, you're at a very high level, and yet you take a risk. And I suppose it is a risk. Whenever you do something like that, it's a risk. You take the risk of going onto these programs where if things go in a different way to what you hoped, it might have a negative impact on your career. Now, that obviously didn't happen. But I mean, was there a reason why you went on those, and did, you know, did you get out of those shows what you hoped to get out of them, I suppose?
I definitely got out of them what I wanted. I had a blast doing all of those shows. I've heard mixed things from different people, good experiences, bad experiences on both of those. Mine personally were just really great fun. And I didn't seek either of them out. I didn't audition or submit for either of those. They, because of other stuff I was doing, they reached out, Fool Us reached out to me through word of mouth, and they said, will you submit something to us? This was season two, or the first season that was in the US, that shot in the US. So this was early on. And I loved the challenge of it. And I don't care if I fail. We just went over in the comedy club. So like, to your point of like the risk, you know, I think the bigger the risk, the bigger the reward. So, you know, doing those things and succeeding, I think was worth, you know, the chance that they could have gone wrong. And then ultimately, the longer I've worked in TV and stuff, I realized if it would have went really wrong, it wouldn't have been on TV. Like if I went there and did so bad that it wouldn't have made good TV, they wouldn't have aired it. And so there was some weird safety net in that. Now, AGT, on the other hand, didn't really have that because it was live. Once I got past a certain round, I was live for two rounds. So that was scary. But and then because of Fool Us, AGT reached out to me having seen my Fool Us. So both of those, and I looked at them as advertisements, you know, time on TV in front of people that probably wouldn't have ever seen me before. And just the chance to show more people my stuff was why I did them, because why not?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. Massive exposure.
Yeah.
Have you any other products in the pipeline that you're working towards in the future? Is there something that you're hoping?
Yeah, I mean, always. There's like tricks that I'm working on. Like, again, I haven't changed the way that I've approached releasing. So to answer your question, I'd be telling you, like, what am I currently working on for myself in my own personal act? And I've got a couple of really cool things that I've been working the bugs out on during COVID that I'm excited to get out this year for people. And then just like tinkering and playing with stuff. And, you know, you said, have I ever kept an idea of from someone? And I haven't. But what I have done is I've said an idea, full unfiltered, and everyone in the room has said no. And then that idea gets put into my book. And so, like, Vanishing Stool was one. Vanishing Stool, I was in a television production meeting and I pitched a chair test and I was like, I hate the third chair in a chair test. You got to do something different, because after the first one, people know what the second two are. I was like, if you can make it disappear. And everybody was like, man, I don't know. I was like, I disagree with you guys. So I have material that I've been told no before, and I continue to work on it. And so those are the things I'm working on right now. I wish I could be specific, but this seems cryptic, but yeah.
No, that's great. And one last question about releasing products. Actually, before we go any further, we've been talking about your products for a while, and obviously everyone knows how much of a fan of yours I am. I'm going to put the URL down here so that people can buy stuff. So what's the URL to your shop?
So it's just blakevoigt.com and then shop. So either /shop or go to my website and then click shop. Or I'm on, it's all through Shopify. So that website's a little bit more complicated, but just blakevoigt.com and then clicking shop will get you to all of the tricks. And then I have other tricks that I don't sell that are on Theory 11 and Penguin and Vanishing Ink. If you just search my name, they should come up.
Perfect. And that brought me to my question I was going to ask you, which is, for somebody who wants to release their own product, you've self-published, you've worked with some of the biggest companies in the world. You know, obviously recently you just did a masterclass with Vanishing Ink, and you worked with Theory 11 and all these different companies. But you also self-publish your stuff as well. For somebody who's got a product that they're sitting on that they want to release, they think it's great, they've been working it in their own act, they're now ready to release it. Is there any advice on that process? I mean, as to how do you decide which company you go for? Do you self-publish, or how do you pitch an idea to a particular company?
Well, I can only speak to my own experiences. I've heard stories from everybody about everyone, you know, you hear. I just know who I've had good experiences with and who I've had bad experiences with. And the only company that I've only ever had only good is Theory 11, but that's just personally. And from the get-go, that was my first like major release was with them. And they have a very easy submission process, and I think most magic companies do websites. If you click around on their website long enough, you know, you can either send them a video, and then it just becomes down to like your fear of sending an idea and hoping that they don't say no and then put it out without you. And I've heard horror stories about that happening. Theory 11 has never done that to me, or I've never seen them do that to anybody else. And then it's just, you know, being willing to be told no and just moving on and taking it to somebody else. I remember there's a trick I created called regeneration where you eat the corner of a card.
Yeah, great.
And you put it back together, and it has sold very, very well once it came out. I submitted that trick to Theory 11 when I was in college, and they hated it. And they wrote back and they were like, not interested, thanks. Showed it to people. I remember Jay Sankey came through Indiana and lecture, showed him, showed Dan Harlan. Everybody was just like, nah. And then I went to Vegas to film a different trick, the one where I met Copperfield and all those people. And I showed Kenner and JB and Dan White and Copperfield the corner trick. And I had just recently started having them hold the card. I had never, like, you know, I tore the card, I ate it, and I put it back together. And I think everybody always assumed it was sleight of hand or something, but it's a crazy gimmick that just basically does it. And I just recently had someone hold the card, so they knew it was the same one the whole time. And I guess that one detail took it from this trick that like everybody was indifferent about to then all of a sudden, like everybody wanted it, Theory 11 released it. And so, you know, what I would say to people who get told no is, just because somebody tells you no doesn't mean it's a bad trick. Maybe it's just not for that website. Maybe it's just not for the masses. Maybe it's just for you. And maybe you never know what tweak, or like John Gustafaro talks about the 1 degree, like changing something by 1 degree or 1%, like that might launch it into the atmosphere. So don't give up on ideas just if people don't like them. Yeah.
Again, brilliant. I hope people are listening to this, because you are literally giving so many amazing sort of golden nuggets. It's amazing.
Like,
let me ask you one more question. What's next for you? Like, you have had a career that most people would only dream of. You know, you've been on TV so many times. You've headlined so many huge events. You're in demand as a creator, as a consultant. You've created some of the most popular products that have ever been released. You've excelled at everything you've decided to do within this industry. If you decided to retire tomorrow, your legacy is set, Blake. Let's be honest, it really is.
Man.
Obviously, you're very young. It's not going to happen. You're only just really getting started. But is there anything else that you want to achieve? Is there anything on your magical bucket list that you want to do? What does the future hold for Blake Voigt?
Yeah, I thank you for all that. But yeah, I would love to have my own residency somewhere. You know, I got to work behind the scenes. Dan White has an amazing show at the Nomad in New York. And I've worked behind the scenes for Justin Willman's live shows. And I would love to be the face of a show that people pay in advance and come to see me on purpose. I feel like I'm a surprise for a lot of people at shows. So I would love to be the date night. I would love to be the thing that people seek out to go find. Mm-hmm. And that's probably what I'm working towards most right now, is taking steps to be able to do that.
That's incredible. That's incredible. Well, I'd buy a ticket to that show absolutely immediately. I really would. And if you got that goal, would you, because obviously you're in demand as a consultant and as a creator, if that took all of your effort, you know, obviously, because when you're doing a show, you know, from working with Copperfield, that's all you're doing. Would you be comfortable not being able to kind of release products and not being able to maybe be a consultant with somebody else? Or is that part of your life that you love so much, it'd be very difficult to not live with that?
Such a good question. I haven't thought that far ahead. I've got blinders on. I'm like, I want this show. And you're asking a very good question. I don't know. I really want that show. And so I'm not thinking about what am I going to do once I get it. I'm just thinking about like, what, you know, what do I have to do? What's one thing I can do today that gets me closer to having that show? Even if it's the smallest thing. That is what advice I heard once that somebody gave, and I have it written in my kitchen right now, is like, sometimes people see the steps they need to do and they're so overwhelmed by how many things that they don't do any of them, or a to-do list. And this speaker said, just do something. Just do one of those things. Like, you don't have to do the whole list that day. You don't have to do everything that you want, that you think you need to do in that hour. Look at the list, pick one, and just do it. And just like, so I have written in my kitchen, like, just do something. And so that means like every day I'm trying to do something that pushes me towards that. But I probably will never stop releasing magic, never stop creating. If I get a show and I do it for a year, I'll probably miss creating and I'll take time off to create. Like, I'm obsessed with so much of it on every level that if I do too much of one thing, I miss the other too much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Of what I know about you, I know that you're super ambitious. You couldn't be where you are if you weren't ambitious. So I know that if that's a goal of yours, there's a very, very good chance very, very soon that Blake Voigt's going to have his own show, and that would be amazing. Thank you, man.
I really do.
I know you're very busy, and I know that we're going to have to wrap this up in a couple of minutes, which is absolutely fine, and we are going to wrap it up. But let me ask you one last question, which I know that I'm going to get kicked in the comments if I don't ask this. As somebody who's done so many TV appearances, we've talked about Corn and we've talked about AGT, we've talked about Fool Us, but you've done lots of other stuff as well, and lots of TV spots and lots of appearances. Do you have any advice to wrap up as to how a magician can get on TV? Because, you know, that is something that a lot of magicians desire. They want, it's kind of like, oh, my holy grail would be if I could just appear on TV once. And you've got people like Corden ringing you up going, hey, can you come on our channel, please? Oh, how about this idea? Yeah, okay, can you come on next week? It's going to take me 6 months to put this together. Okay, no problem. Like most people that go, who are you? You know, yeah, I mean, that shows how in demand you are. And that hasn't happened overnight. I mean, is there any advice on how you get yourself into a position where they're calling you?
Oh, man. I don't know. I mean, there's that great quote, like, this is not me, but like, be so good they can't ignore you. Is that Steve Martin? Is that?
Steve Martin, I think. Yeah.
Be so good they can't ignore you. Like, just like you said, a lot of those experiences and things on my resume didn't come from me seeking them out. They came from people seeking me out, but those people seek me out because of all the other stuff I was doing. And I was just trying to do as much good stuff as possible for people, for myself. And it's very rare that I pass up an opportunity or a work opportunity. You know, the weirder, the better. If it's for someone or for an event or for a thing. So I would just say, like, to people, take every opportunity. And I'll tell you right now, for every time you have seen me on TV, I have missed being on TV 20 to 30 times because I went there, I filmed, nobody ever saw it. It got edited. I was there, auditioned, I failed. Like you see on TV the successes, but you don't see, and there might be a false sense of like, oh, if I just did what he did, I'd be on TV. Like, no, you gotta like miss 20 times before you hit, you know? So like, I feel like advice I'd give to people is don't go for one thing, go for 10, you know, don't send one email to get on TV, send 10, you know, just, it's a numbers game with creating. Don't write down one idea, write down 10 every morning. Like when I'm working on projects, I try to write down as many ideas as possible. You know, I said, like when Copperfield hired me, he said, what good ideas do you promise you'll bring to my team if I hire you? And I said, I promise you zero good ideas, but I promise you, I will be the guy that never runs out of bad ideas. And that got me the gig, because just the idea of not shutting up and not hitting a wall and not just thinking that you can write one thing or send one email or make one phone call and something's going to happen. I feel like the best advice I've been given and I could regurgitate is just go for as much shit as possible.
That is incredible advice. You have given so much amazing advice in this interview, Blake. I mean, work hard, be nice to each other, you know, never give up. You know, put yourself out there. The stuff that you're saying, everybody knows it, but the difference is you're doing it, you've done it, and that's why you are where you are. And somebody that maybe isn't where they are, maybe they're just not done that enough, and maybe they need to do it a little bit more. So,
well, man, yeah, that's a good way of thinking about it.
Incredible advice, it really is. And an amazing way to end this interview. Like I say, I know you're really busy. I would love to chat to you for Sean Farquhar levels of interview, you know.
Me, you know, too, man.
I'd love to have you on here for 3 or 4 hours, but I know you're a busy guy. I want to say thank you so much for coming on the channel. Really
appreciate it. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. And great questions. I appreciate you asking me things that I have not thought to ask myself.
Appreciate it, man.
This is like a therapy session.
Well, you know what? I'm going to put the link down to the shop again down below. But also, awesome. Your social media, you're very active on Insta and various different channels. So I'll put your social media links down here as well.
Cool, man. And the name of your channel is slightly, right?
Craig Petty's Magic TV.
If you want to put it on there too, I'll have it. So if anybody types in the discount code at checkout, Craig Petty's Magic TV, all lowercase, I'll do 20% off for the next year on the shop. So we'll hide this at the end of the video so that like only people who watch it all the way to the end will get that.
I'm kicking you off this interview because I'm going to go and place an order on yours. You know how much stuff I order off you. I could do with about another 15 Acro Index cards. So
there we go.
that's brilliant. Thank you so much, Blake.
Totally.
So follow Blake on social media. Make sure that you leave a comment down below, because he'll see it. And one more time, Blake, it's been amazing following your journey up until this point, and I always will be one of your biggest supporters. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Craig. I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much.
No problem. Guys, thank you very much for watching. Make sure you stick around because there'll be another video up tomorrow. Leave a comment down below for Blake. But guys, thank you very much for watching the interview. My name's Craig from Magic.
Thanks for listening to the Talk Magic Podcast.
Magic.
Be sure to like and subscribe to the Magic TV YouTube channel.
Magic TV.
Which includes 14 unique videos every week. Whatever type of magic you're interested in, we've got you covered. Just search YouTube for Craig Petty's Magic TV. Or click on the link in the description from this podcast below. Be sure to join us next Friday at 5 p.m. right here for another Talk Magic Podcast.